Alrighty, well, we are now deep in the wood. We're in the park, right near the little creek or stream or drainage canal, whatever it is. Body of water that flows through the park. Just read some news stories. There were a few people jogging, but I don't think they'll mind. Alright, well, we start the way we pretty much always start, with the world stuff, world news. So, first, in Senegal, 11 newborn babies were killed in a hospital fire. 11 babies died Wednesday in a fire in a hospital in Tivaren in western Senegal, a tragedy that highlights the serious deficiencies of the country's public health system. I have just learned with pain and dismay the death of 11 newborns in the fire in the neonatal department of the public hospital of Tivaren, tweeted Senegalese President Macky Sall. To their mothers and families, I express my deepest sympathy, he added. Three babies were saved, said the mayor of Tivaren. It's Tivaone. So I've been saying Tivaren, but it's probably not right. The fire was caused by a short circuit and fire spread very quickly, who is also, said Diop, who is also a member of parliament, and better known as Diop Sy. In early April, another tragedy in public hospital had already shocked Senegal. The press reported that Astu Sokna, a woman in her 30s who was 9 months pregnant, died on April 1st in the hospital in the north after waiting in great pain for 20 hours for the cesarean section she wanted. The staff allegedly argued that her operation was not planned and threatened to chase her away if she insisted. This death had caused a wave of indignation on social networks against the shortcomings of the public health system. Faced with the outcry caused by the death of Ms. Soka, President Sall had instructed to look for those responsible. The Minister of Health, Abdullah Douf Sar, acknowledged on April 14th the death of Ms. Soka could have been avoided. The situation is very unfortunate and extremely painful. The investigation is underway to see what happened. It's just a tragedy. It's really sad. In the Ukraine war, the fighting rages in east of Ukraine. Russian forces attacked more than 40 towns in the eastern region. Shelling killed at least 4 people in the center of the country's city of Kharkiv, and the city of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk in the Donbas came under intense bombardment. Putin signed a decree making it easier for Ukrainians in occupied areas to become Russian citizens, though. A proposal to condemn the regional health emergency triggered by Russia's attack in Ukraine will come before a World Health Organization assembly today, prompting a revival resolution from Moscow that makes no mention of its role in the crisis. Africa's CDC warns against vaccine hoarding over monkeypox outbreak. Since early May, more than 200 suspected and confirmed cases of the virus have been detected in at least 19 countries. The acting director of Africa's top public health agency says he hopes rich countries will not hoard vaccines during the current outbreak, as they did with the jabs against COVID-19. Sick burn. Very sad, but true. Monkeypox is a mild viral infection, is an endemic in 11 African countries, including Cameroon, the Central African Republic, the DRC, and Nigeria. Since early May, more than 200 suspected and confirmed cases have been detected in at least 19 countries. We kind of just said that. Last weekend, The WHO said it expects to identify more cases of monkeypox as it expands surveillance in countries where the disease is not typically found. Vaccine should go where it's needed the most and equitably, so based on risk and not on who can buy it, Ahmed Agwel Oma, acting director of the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, told a weekly press briefing. We are working with all our member states on the continent to set up surveillance for monkeypox, he said. There are no current vaccines for monkeypox, but the smallpox vaccine has been shown to offer up to 85% protection against monkeypox. Available supplies of the smallpox vaccines will be prioritized for health workers in areas with confirmed cases. We do not have yet enough stocks to be able to go into the general public. A little warning, if you're in Africa anyway, they don't have a whole lot of supply. If you remember a few months ago, we talked about how in Afghanistan you still have to get polio and is endemic there, so you still have to get polio vaccines. So it's kind of interesting, because in the U.S. polio vaccines and smallpox vaccines are kind of a thing of the past, but not so much anymore. Iran says at least one dead in industrial accident near a military complex. One person has been killed in an industrial accident, so not like a war or getting shot or anything, near an Iranian military complex that has previously come under scrutiny from the UN nuclear watchdog. An industrial accident took place on Wednesday evening in one of the factories in the Parchin area, leading to the death of one person and injuries to another. Iran's official IRNA news agency said, gave no details of the cause of the accident. The Parchin complex, southeast of Tehran, is alleged to have previously hosted testing of conventional explosives that could be used to detonate a nuclear warhead, something Iran has repeatedly denied. The site came under renewed scrutiny by the IAEA in 2015, when Tehran reached a deal, the nuclear deal that the U.S. pulled out of and caused all sorts of discord and unrest and screwed up the world over there again. Iran had previously denied the IAEA access to Parchin, saying it was a military site unrelated to nuclear activities. The agency's then-chief, the late Yukiya Amano, paid a visit. In June 2020, a gas tank explosion in the public area near the complex shook the capital 20 miles away, but caused no casualties. Iran's nuclear program has been the target of a campaign of sabotage, cyber attacks, and the murder of scientists, which it blames on Israel. Israeli leaders have repeatedly refused to rule out military action to prevent Iran from developing an atomic bomb. So, that's what's going on over there. Pretty rough, right? Let's talk about some financial stuff, because that's less traumatic, I guess. Oh, I want to point out, there's a lot of dudes that live in this little wooded park area here. A lot of squirrels and bug dudes, like dragonflies and stuff. And joggers and runners. which is why I think the other dudes aren't around. A UK-EU trade war would be shocking and unnecessary, the Irish Prime Minister, Michael, it's got an accent over the A. He called on the UK government to get into the tunnel and negotiate over changes to the post-Brexit trade agreements for Northern Ireland. Tao Seach told the BBC that Ireland and the European Union do not want a trade war with the UK. The government last week announced plans to override key parts of the Brexit deal within weeks. Boris Johnson's government agreed to the trade deal with the EU in 2019 after the UK voted to leave the bloc. In the event of the UK unilaterally abandoning agreed elements of the deal that create barriers on goods trading between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, the EU has the power to suspend parts of the entire post-Brexit trade deal. When asked at the World Economic Forum in Davos, there's Davos again, lots of stuff happened there, whether the EU was drawing up plans to apply tariffs to politically sensitive UK exports, Mr. Martin declined to get into the detail of anything like that, because hopefully that's something we don't ever have to contemplate. For now, I'm simply saying, I've been consistently saying, get down there, get into the tunnel. UK government and EU, negotiate and get the technocrats in there, he added. When asked why at this time of rising inflation the EU was pondering such a move, the Irish Prime Minister said it was only the UK making threats. That's the only threat they're here, and that's what's happened. Basically, if I can get it, I'll put it in calm, but the basic problem is that Ireland and the UK and the Good Friday agreement, basically, there's always going to be free movement between Northern Ireland and regular Ireland, but Northern Ireland's part of the UK, so isn't part of the EU, and so it should be goods that leave Ireland that go into goods that leave the UK that go into Ireland have to get taxed somehow. So anyway, there's a map I'll show you if I can. Ugh. I keep hearing people, but I don't see them, so I'm not sure where they are. And I don't want to disturb anybody by talking about news, especially this sad news. The value of the Lebanese pound drops to an all-time low. The black market rate, widely used across the country, now sits at $35,600 to the U.S. dollar. The black market value of the Lebanese pound has fallen to an all-time low, $35,600 against the U.S. dollar, a drop from $26,800 in the space of just 2 weeks, and a sign that Lebanon's economic crisis is set to continue to cripple the country. Beat it, fly. The exchange rate is unofficial, but is the one primarily used across Lebanon. Yeah, no duh, it's official. Yeah, the underground illegal market. The depreciation of the Lebanese pound has caused a ripple effect, causing even more economic difficulties for the country. Petrol prices in 3 weeks surged by almost 25%, while the government is expected to soon further roll back medicine subsidies and increase prices. Meanwhile, Lebanese authorities continue to implement temporary measures to alleviate wheat shortages. This rapid unraveling, just 10 days after a cash-strapped Lebanon elected a new parliament, comes after a few months of relative calm for the fragile currency, which has lost 90% of its value in less than 3 years. The authorities primarily blame global inflation and the effect of Russia's war in Ukraine on international wheat and fuel prices. However, experts say domestic reasons play a large role in creating the economic conditions that currently exist in Lebanon. So, we'll see who's right after the Ukraine stuff settles down, whether or not Lebanon pulls out of it or makes it out. You know, speaking of Lebanon, that reminds me, wasn't Klinger, the actor who played Klinger, wasn't he from Lebanon? I think so. Maybe you guys will think about that and remember. Well, shucks. It's about that time. We should put a song in. So, here, I'm going to probably play a song here. We'll find out.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Well, you are listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF, and SDF is powered by you, people who listen. So thank you so much for listening and tuning in and hanging out with us. I hope you're in calm, having a good chat. And just a reminder, at 1930 UTC, every damn day is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tope. And at 20 hours is pretty much always something interesting. Go to anonradio.net or press the equal sign in com, and you'll see the upcoming schedule. A breeze blew by, is blowing, and it feels very nice. Let's go ahead and pick back up. We got lots of news. We'll jump down to, right here. Here we go. Sorry, I'm pulling it up. Here we go. There were two stories that I thought were very interesting, because they're kind of like people who aren't supposed to do the thing doing the thing. So first, how to murder your husband writer found guilty of murdering her husband. A jury in the U.S. city of Portland has convicted a self-published romance novelist who wrote an essay titled How to Murder Your Husband, a fatally shooting her husband. The 12-person jury found Nancy Crampton Brophy, 71, guilty of second-degree murder on Wednesday after deliberating for 2 days over Daniel Brophy's death. Brophy was a 63-year-old chef and was killed on 2nd of June 2018 as he prepared for work at the Oregon Culinary Institute in southwest Portland. Crampton Brophy showed no visible reaction to the verdict in a crowded Multnomah County courtroom. Lisa Maxfield, one of her lawyers, said the defense team would appeal. The defendant's 2011 treatise, detailed various options for committing an untraceable killing, written in the form of a brainstorming exercise for writers. Its opening reads, "As a romantic suspense writer, I spend a lot of time thinking about murder, and consequently, about police procedure. After all, if the murder is supposedly to set me free, I certainly don't want to spend any time in jail. And let me say clearly for the record, I don't like jumpsuits, and orange isn't my color." The blog post went on to detail motives, financial, lying, cheating bastard, abuser, and discussion of possible methods. Knives were personal and close-up, blood everywhere, while poison, considered a woman's weapon, was too easy to trace. Crampton Brophy wrote guns were loud, messy, and required some skill. The circuit judge, Christopher Ramos, had excluded the essay from trial, noting it had been published several years ago. Jurors were not allowed to consider it in their judgment. A prosecutor, however, alluded to the essay's themes without naming it after Crampton Brophy took the stand. Prosecutors told jurors Crampton Brophy was motivated by money problems and a life insurance policy. She did own the same make and model of gun used to kill her husband and was seen on surveillance driving to and from the Culinary Institute. Police never found the gun that killed Brophy. Defense lawyers said the gun parts were the inspiration for an idea Brophy had for a new book and suggested someone else might have killed Brophy during a botched robbery. So, I didn't do it. I just wrote about how I'd do it if I did it. Sounds very similar to our friend, the Juice, O.J. Simpson, if I did it. And in a remarkable similar situation, at the Louvre, of all places, Louvre ex-director charged in art trafficking case. A former director of the Louvre Museum in Paris has been charged with conspiring to hide the origin of archaeological treasures that investigators suspect were smuggled out of Egypt in the chaos of the Arab Spring. Jean-Luc Martinez was charged Wednesday after being taken in for questioning along with two French specialists in Egyptian art who were not charged. The Louvre, which is owned by the French state, is the world's most visited museum with around 10 million visitors a year before the pandemic and is home to some of Western civilization's most celebrated cultural heritage. The museum declined to comment when contacted by AFP. French investigators opened the case in July 2018, 2 years after the branch in Abu Dhabi bought a rare pink granite stele, depicting the pharaoh Tutankhamun and four other historic works for 8 million euros. Martinez, who ran the Paris Louvre from 2013 to 2021, is accused of turning a blind eye to fake certificates of origin for the pieces, a fraud thought to involve several other art experts. He's been charged with complicity in fraud and concealing the origin of criminally obtained works by false endorsement. So, for now, we will reserve his declarations for the judiciary and has no doubt that his good faith will be established, he said. French investigation suspects that hundreds of artifacts were pillaged from Egypt and other Middle East countries during the protests in the early 2010s, became known as the Arab Spring. So no matter what, no matter what you're doing, there are other people in the world doing other things at the same time. Kind of a bummer, right? Check this out. This is pretty cool. Man's double hand transplant is space age stuff, even though space age was, what, the 60s? 50s? Something like that. Then we had the atomic age. Anyway, Stephen Gallagher laughed when it was first suggested he could have a double hand transplant. But 5 months on from pioneering surgery that could have cost him all use of his hands, he is now pain-free and enjoying a new lease of life. Stephen, his age 48, developed an unusual rash on his cheeks and nose about 13 years ago and pains in his right arm. Doctors initially thought it was lupus and then carpal tunnel, and the father of three had an operation. But when the pain returned to both arms, he was referred to a specialist who confirmed he had scleroderma, an autoimmune disease that causes scarring of the skin and internal organs. The condition affected areas including his nose, mouth, and hands. About 7 years ago, his fingers started curling in until they were in a fist position. He was suffering horrendous pain. My hands started to close. It got to the point where it was basically two fists. My hands were unusable, he recalled. I couldn't do a thing apart from lifting things with two hands. I couldn't grab anything. It was a struggle to get dressed and things like that. Stephen, from Dreghorn in North Ayrshire, was forced to give up his work as a roof tiler. He was referred to Professor Andrew Hart, a consultant, plastic and hand surgeon based in Glasgow, who first raised the possibility of a double hand transplant. At the time, I laughed and thought, that's space age kind of things, he said. After further conversations with Professor Hart, Stephen also spoke to Professor Simon Kay, a consultant plastic surgeon at Leeds Teaching Hospital. Both outlined the risk involved. They were really understanding and really open about what might happen, that I could lose my hands altogether, he recalled. They said it was unlikely, but it was a risk. My wife and I spoke about it and came to the agreement to go for it. I could end up losing my hands anyway, so it was just a case of letting them know I was going to go with it. Stephen has three daughters, 12, 24, and 27, and they had to undergo psychological evaluation and ensure he was prepared for the transplant. He's believed to be the first person in the world with his condition to have the surgery. It involved a 30-strong team of professionals from many disciplines and was carried out in Leeds over a 12-hour period in December 2021 after a suitable donor was found. After the operation, I woke up and it was quite surreal, Stephen said. These hands are amazing. Everything has happened so quickly. From the moment I woke up from the operation, I could move them. After spending 4 weeks in Leeds General Infirmary following the operation, Stephen now makes regular visits to hospitals in Glasgow for physiotherapy and monitoring. Although dexterous tasks such as doing up buttons are still beyond him, his improving condition means he can do things like stroke his dog, turn on the tap, and fill a glass of water. It has given me a new lease on life, he added. I'm still finding things hard now, but things are getting better every week with the physio and the occupational therapist. Everything is just slowly getting better. Pain is the big thing. Before the operation, it was horrendous. I was on so much pain relief, it was unbelievable, but now I have no pain at all. Hands are something we see every day, and we use them in so many ways, he explained. For this reason, we and our clinical psychologists assess and prepare patients in order to be sure they will be able to cope psychologically with the permanent reminder of their transplant and the risk the body may reject the transplanted hands. For Stephen, the operation's been transformative. He now hopes to return to some kind of work once his hands have improved enough. Can you imagine that, getting a hand transplant, and then it's like, oh, whoops, your body's rejected them. So while you've got your hands back for now, you're going to have to go hands-free soon. Oof. Yeah, it's kind of rough. All right, just a couple quick headlines, and then we'll get out of here. All right, let's run through the headlines, because I got to get back to the office. It is. I took way too long wandering around in the woods. So the Texas shooting that happened. Police are accused of a delay in storming the school. That's right, the cop showed up and then just kind of hung out in front of the school while the guy was killing people. And then once he was done killing people, then they went and arrested him. Police were urged to charge into a deadly school shooting in Texas by onlookers, witnesses say, with one suggesting he considered doing so himself as he became frustrated. Texas officials say the gunman was inside the school for an hour before he was killed. 19 children and 2 adults died, while 17 others were injured. Eyewitness Juan Carranza told the Associated Press, women shouted at officers to go in there. But the 24-year-old who witnessed the scene at the Robb Elementary School from his house said police didn't enter. Steve McCraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, told a news conference that the gunman was on site between 40 minutes and an hour. In a statement, Facebook's parent company said the private one-to-one text messages were discovered after the tragedy occurred, and it was working with investigators. Sorry, I can't do that story. It's just like, it's a bummer. You've been listening to News to Me. I'm DJ Marcus. Coming up is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe.
7, 6.